For Spokane Public Radio, I'm Chris Messini. My guest today is Sharma Shields. She's the author of a short story collection, Favorite Monster, and a novel, The Sasquatch Hunter's Almanac, which won the 2016 Washington State Book Award for Fiction. Her new novel, The Cassandra, takes place during World War II at the Hanford site in Washington State, where the plutonium was manufactured for the atomic bombs dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The book follows a young woman, Mildred Groves, who escapes a controlling family to take a job as a secretary at Hanford. While there, she begins to have visions of the destruction and suffering the project she's working on will cause. But of course, her warnings and premonitions are ignored. The Cassandra will be available Tuesday, February 12th, and Sharma will be reading that same day at 6:30 p.m. at the downtown branch of the Spokane Public Library. Sharma Shields, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me, Chris.
So the title of your novel, The Cassandra, takes its name from the character in Greek mythology who was a princess of Troy who had premonitions of war and disaster that were always ignored. Mm-hmm. So what inspired you to adapt that story to World War II and the Manhattan Project?
Well, I came about all of that in sort of a long, circuitous route. I was diagnosed with MS around the time that I was starting a new book, and someone said to me regarding my diagnosis that, oh, well, a lot of people in this area have multiple sclerosis because we're downwind of Hanford. So I started researching Hanford, and I wasn't imagining that I would write historical fiction at that point, but I became so fascinated with the idea that the vast majority of the workers there in 1944 had no idea what they were creating, and that they were there out of a sense of patriotism, out of a sense of duty, and were asked to keep whatever they were doing completely secret. Mm-hmm. And something about those themes of secrecy, safety, the whole, you know, loose lips sink ships sort of mentality started me thinking about a character who maybe can kind of see through all of that and see the truth there and end up being very frustrated by it. That's really what kind of got me started thinking about my main character, Mildred. And of course, because I am a total Greek myth nerd, the Cassandra myth popped into my head with that as well.
Mm-hmm. So before we get too much farther into it, I want to have you read a little bit of it and meet Mildred. Would you be willing to read from the opening chapter?
I would be delighted to. Let's see. So this is, of course, set in 1944, and this is called To Make Men Free. I was at the mercy of the man behind the desk. I needed him to see my future as clearly as I saw it. He held four pink digits aloft, ring finger belted by a fat gold band, and listed off the qualities of the ideal working woman. Chaste, willing, smart, silent. I swallowed his words, coaxed them into my bloodstream, my bones. I crossed my ankles and pinned my knees together, morphing into the exemplary she. The man eyed me with prideful ownership. Frankly, Miss Groves, you're the finest typist we've interviewed. Your speed and efficiency are commendable. I opened up my shoulders, smiling. They named me star pupil at OMAC secretarial. You're not a bad-looking girl, you know that? Thank you, how kind of you. A little large, plumper than some, but a nice enough face. The man smoothed open the file on his desk. Good husband stock at Hanford, Miss Groves. Plenty of men to choose from. In my lap, my hands shook like tender newborn mice. Such sweet, dumb hands. Calm down, you wild darlings. I focused on the man's sunburnt face. It reminded me of a worm's face, sleek, thin-lipped, blunt. He was handsome in a wormish way, or wormish in a handsome way. If I squinted just a little, his head melted into a pink oval smudge. We spoke in a simple recruiting office in my hometown of OMAC, Washington. All of Okanagan County was abuzz with the news of job openings at Hanford. The room we sat in was crisp and clean, beige paneled walls, pine floors, plain blue drapes. A war poster hanging behind the recruiter's worm head featured a young, attractive woman in uniform, crimson lips, chin nobly lifted, blue eyes snapping and firm, their color enhanced by the stars and stripes rippling behind her. Above her strong profile, it read, "To make men free, enlist in the waves today. You will share the gratitude of a nation when victory is ours."
That was Sharma Shields reading from her new novel, The Cassandra, which will be available Tuesday, February 12th. And she'll be reading at the downtown branch of the Spokane Public Library at 6:30 p.m. on that day. So we get a sense of Mildred there, your main character, and we also get a sense of, you know, she comes up against a lot of conflict in this novel, and there's obviously the war context, and her family is kind of abusive and controlling. But more than anything, she comes up against the world of men, of sexism and chauvinism. And that is really the main antagonistic force in the novel.
Yes, for sure.
Was that an intentional theme, or did that just arise naturally because that's what it was like for a woman in the 1940s?
Well, I think it was all connected for me as I was writing the idea of militant patriarchy and a woman trying to just exist comfortably in a workspace, which I think was problematic hugely in 1944 as women were really entering the workspace for the first time, but was also something that I had seen in 2018,
sure.
Working, you know, even in places like the library. So even before, you know, some of the Me Too movement items started cropping up, that was very much going to be a theme in this book.
Of course, one of the main ways that she is treated as a woman is she's not believed. So her visions that
exactly.
she has, her premonitions yeah. of the future are dismissed as hysteria, just like the mythological Cassandra.
Yeah. And almost treated as though, oh, isn't that cute? I mean, isn't that cute that she has this sort of theory about what's going to happen from,
right.
you know, it's almost admirably cute.
Yeah. And those passages where she's having those visions, for me, were some of the most striking passages of the book. So would you be willing to read part of one of those vision scenes?
Sure. So this is one of the very first visions she has while she's at Hanford. And this chapter is called Skulls, and I'm going to skip to where the vision begins. Later, an hour, several hours, the vision prodded me awake and urged me to rise. The same swampy, heady sensation fell over me, the one I always had during a vision, the sound of invisible wings in my ears. The weight of it took hold of me by the armpits and pulled me outdoors. I floated obediently east through the dimmest shadows of the sleeping barracks. I traveled the short distance to the western bank of the Columbia River, where the water whirled along the northeastern corner of the Hanford camp. A great blue heron materialized on the step, huge, nearly 5 feet tall, her thick throat like a rope, her shoulders hunched, her legs two pale orange stalks with high ankles like contorted knees. The heron lifted her speckled throat, and the long feathers on her neck jutted like thorns. Then she cowered and in a deft moment lifted away from the hill's summit, beating her large wings ponderously, swooping toward the desolate river basin. I beetled down the hillside after her, recalling how, when I was a girl, I would plunge down the bouldered embankment into the aching cold of the Okanagan River. Don't think of mother. Don't even let yourself. Stop now. On the rocky beach, the heron waited for me. She pointed her beak toward the belly of the riverbed. I ambled atop the black rocks, skipping from one to another, but they shifted beneath my feet. I slipped again and again, trying to gain purchase and failing. I put my hand against a round stone and was surprised to find it wet, not with water, but with something soft and fleshy. Algae, I assumed. Moss. I drew the substance away like it were the top of a mushroom, and it came off in my palm easily with a little pop. The smell was both terrible and good, a burning like over-roasted meat. I turned the thing over in my hand and stared for a moment, disbelieving, before dropping it at my feet. It was the skin of a child's face.
That was Sharma Shields reading from her new novel, The Cassandra. Both of your novels blend the world of reality and fantasy. So the Sasquatch Hunter's Almanac, you have Sasquatch, who is sort of a homewrecker within a human family, sort of a love triangle involving a Sasquatch, among other things. And in this book, you blend real historical events with mythology and otherworldly premonitions. So what is it about that world of fantasy that you think helps inform the real world?
I think a lot of what I write is inspired by the works that have stuck with me from childhood. So fairy tales, Greek mythology, books that I really loved that I even read in college, like 100 Years of Solitude and Midnight's Children. I think we can learn a lot through human behavior when we view it through metaphor. And I think that's kind of what I'm really attracted to and really unexpected and fantastical work. It can take us by surprise enough, maybe help us step outside ourselves and see things from a distance a little bit more. And I know when I'm writing, I'm most delighted when I surprise myself, whether it's something fantastical or just something really unexpected that happens. And that's also what I look for as a reader. I love those unexpected turns.
My guest has been Sharma Shields, who is the author of two novels, The Sasquatch Hunter's Almanac, which won the 2016 Washington State Book Award for Fiction, and her new novel, The Cassandra, which will be released Tuesday, February 12th. And she'll be reading that day at 6:30 p.m. at the downtown branch of the Spokane Public Library, and books will be available there, sold by Auntie's Bookstore. Sharma Shields, thank you so much for being with me.
Can't thank you enough for having me, Chris. Thanks.